Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
I'm back. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but listen anyway. And you know what? Dean is never, never very far away. He will actually be checking in throughout the show as Dean is taking a step away from the radio side to do a little parading at the Southside Irish Parade on the WGN television float. And so throughout the show, fear not, loyal Dean fans. You will hear the dulcet tones of one Dean Richards throughout the show. He'll be calling in with updates as to how things are going. The parade itself doesn't start until noon, but we'll get some behind-the-scenes float updates from Dean. And I've got lots planned. As usual, I always try to stuff at least 4 hours of radio baloney into a one-pound bag. And so we've got lots of guests, interesting topics to go. But why don't we just go right to Dean? Is Dean there at 9 for his first hit?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Dean Areno.
I'm at the TV station, so that's why I sound like I'm actually right there.
Wow,
boy,
yeah.
When you say you got baloney, you're not kidding.
4 pounds of it. Four hours of it.
You're full of baloney. You're not. There's never been a truer statement on WGN than that.
Well, it's better than corned beef.
I don't
or
know.
Or maybe it isn't.
Oh, no. I love corned beef.
I was wondering. So, does
Are you not a corned beef fan?
Oh, no, no. I love a good corned beef with a little chaser or actually a combo of pastrami.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah. I mean, that's a heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah. But with or without the cabbage?
I'm you know what? I've become a cabbage fan.
I love cabbage.
I was never a big cabbage guy.
You know, I can't be gassy enough on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Well, thanks to you, several months ago, you had mentioned that you had bought an air fryer.
Yes.
And so, and you were just raving about how
That's
it
right.
was, you know, you
changed my life.
Yeah. So, you know, once again, I idolize you on so many fronts. So, not
again,
only
full of baloney, yeah. But you didn't hear me before.
How do you think I'm able to fill in for you all the time? Not by sucking up? I mean, come on. So, so anyway, not only did I get an air fryer, I got the same brand that you did.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And so now to your point about, vegetables and gas, which is a great way to start the show, by the way.
Yeah, which is, by the way, going to be the name of my autobiography.
Dean Richards.
Vegetables and gas.
Vegetables and gas. My gosh, the other day, how's this for a platter? Cauliflower, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. It was like a symphony.
As I've said so many times, your wife is one lucky woman.
So what I love about this is that I got an email from Dean a couple of weeks ago that said, hey, you know, I'm going to be on the WGN float in the Southside Irish Parade. This is the first time WGN is involved in that?
In the Southside Parade.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're calling out all the big guns. Although I hear from what I was watching the news, no Tom Skilling on the float.
No T. Skilling, no. But you know what? It doesn't matter because we have Bozo on the float. And when Bozo is on the float, It doesn't matter who else is there.
Wow, you got Bozo.
Yeah, this is our first parade since the pandemic. We haven't done any parades.
And I know how you love
then.
Parades.
I do actually.
Are you a parade fan?
I'm not so crazy about standing there, but I enjoy being in them. And
so what will you be wearing? Are you going to be like a Greek leprechaun?
This parade in particular, you know, it goes right by my old house.
Does it? Oh, really?
Literally one block away from my old house.
Oh, very cool.
Yep. So I know a lot of old friends are going to be there and my family from
nice.
On the south side. They're going to be there. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. And Bozo, I mentioned, is on the float.
Now, will he have a green outfit instead of the blue one?
Oh, no, no. Bozo always wears, traditional. But Ray Cortopassi is going to be there. Lauren Jiggets is going to be there. Tanya Francisco.
Some of the B team and the A team.
Yeah, no, it's a nice mixture of all the different parts of the day.
No, I'm picturing Dean.
Oh,
what's that?
Brona Tumulty.
Oh, I was going to ask you, is Brona? I mean, if Brona isn't on your float,
Brona Tumulty. I'm telling people to come and see Brona.
I am.
This is her first St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago, and you'll be able to find out once and for all that brogue she has is completely fake.
Well, I believe that when on the WGN news, I believe that they give her every story that they know will have several ing words in it. If there are no ing words in the story, Brona is not assigned.
She doesn't get the assignment.
She goes, "Well, don't be talking and flirting and running." And I love that. Oh, she sounds that is such a great
she's the real deal.
Great accent. Yeah, so she's got to be having
a
great time.
She's the real deal, yeah. So.
And she'll be floating with you then.
She'll be floating with us.
So I see Dean today dressed with green leotards. I'm seeing a little one. Like, you have a very...
I don't think they make leotards in my size, by the way.
I see you with one of those little green hats.
I don't think they sell those at the Husky Boys store.
At Sears. Oh, my God, did I hate that. I hated going to Sears just for that reason.
Me too. Same.
But you have a vast hat collection, so will you be having a little green derby?
I have a special St. Patrick's Day fedora.
Ah, very nice.
That I will be wearing, and I will have the appropriate amount of green on today.
Well, I went to St. Pat's High School in Chicago on the Northwest Side, and for one of the homecoming years, I think senior year, I actually dressed up as the St. Pat's leprechaun.
Of course you did.
Yes, I did.
Of course you did.
And there wasn't even a parade.
And I'll bet you still have the costume also, right? What'd you say, Ryan? Did Ryan say
something? I said that was in November.
Yeah, right.
You're right.
That was yesterday night.
Right.
But yeah. So are you gearing up? What is a Dean doing now? Are you having a? Is there such thing as a corned beef and cabbage gyro? I mean, I'm still kind of.
Why are you mixing the ethnicities?
Well,
why can't I just be Irish today?
Well, I guess everybody's Irish.
Yeah, I don't. Why can't? First of all, I would be having a traditional Irish breakfast if I was going to have something like that.
Green ouzu?
Ouzo. It's ouzo.
Ouzo.
That would be. I'm against all green beverages, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not big on the green stuff.
No, exactly. I'm not a fan.
I do like the Shamrock Shake.
I have told the story before that I had a friend many years ago. We were in the St. Patrick's Day parade and we were drinking green beers because we were all, 20 years old.
Right.
And apparently, he had some issue with his teeth.
Oh dear.
That he had no enamel on his teeth,
so they turned green.
His teeth got dyed green and the dye did not come off for months.
That's better than the dyeing of the river down here.
Yeah. It's like that movie, The Boy with the Green Hair.
Oh,
remember
my God,
that?
How funny.
Yeah.
And how long did it last?
I don't remember exactly, but forever.
Oh,
we made fun of him forever that his teeth turned green.
So what would you be? Will you be doing anything? Would you be throwing any free gifts out to people?
No, you're not allowed to do that. You're not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're not supposed. They have a long list of rules.
My goodness!
You're not supposed to throw stuff because it's dangerous for people. They, come rushing toward the float and they could get hurt. So we don't do that.
Have you got your hand, your little royal hand wave?
Of course,
you got that down.
Yeah, I got a special hand gesture for you right now. also, by the way,
which I'm used to. So much so I don't even notice it.
Yeah. You're number one on St. Patrick's Day.
So you're lucky weather-wise. My gosh. Just think if you were in the one downtown, the parade downtown was, 20-some degrees?
Oh. Yeah, it was cold. I've been in plenty of freezing St. Patrick's Day parades.
You're supposed to have, about 50 today? 50 in the 50s?
It's going to be nice, yeah.
What time do you kick off? Around noon?
It's going to be nice. It's going to step off at noon at 103rd and Western.
And, of course, now I know exactly where that is.
Right, because you're...
I am now an adopted Southsider.
Right, exactly.
And so I know, in fact, when I was going to where my play was, my play was on 111th and Western, so I know exactly. There's even a stoplight at 103rd and Western.
Yeah, a lot of corners have stoplights,
as
it turns out.
Yeah, I know, but some don't.
The main street.
For instance, 102nd doesn't.
Well, the main street's 103rd does.
Is that a main street?
That's a main street.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but we're going to be going all the way down to 115th Street. Okay. And that is...
Down Western, then, right?
Right down Western Avenue. That's what we used to call the Death March back in the day.
Why is that?
Because there's so many bars.
Oh, right.
And, you know, again, back when I was 20 years old, you would try to hit as many of the Irish bars as you possibly could. And, you know, if you didn't wind up dead by the time you, you know, finished... So the march, you are considered strong.
So you're going to go right past the Beverly Arts Center,
yep,
which is on 111th. And
right.
So you go from 103rd to 115th.
I'm going to try to get the parade marshals to take a detour off onto Artesian Street, which is where I lived,
yeah,
which is one block west.
Yeah.
Because I would like to go by, or like literally go by my old house, maybe stop in, see who lives there now, show them where my bedroom was.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they'll love that. Because and then you show them where your basement radio station was. That's when you were seven years old.
I had my basement radio station in that house. That's right. Dean Diamond coming at you.
Dean Diamond. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah, man.
Getting ready for our St. Patrick's Day broadcast. Right from the... Well, there wasn't a Southside Irish Parade back then, though, right?
Not in the 70s.
No.
Didn't start till, I think, 81.
And we should also mention, while we celebrate the Southside Irish Parade,
Northwest,
the Northwest Side has one. I just noticed that's somewhere on Northwest Highway.
Yep.
Near Raven Street, and I know where that area is, around Talcott there. So some of my friends from St. Pat's, I used to hang around there. We used to call it HF, Harlem and Foster.
HF?
The HF.
HF?
Go on HF.
And then go over to the Hip?
Oh, the Hip. I lived at the Hip. Are you kidding?
Of course.
Harlem and Irving Plaza.
Yeah.
They had an arcade there. I used to always play my Captain Fantastic pinball machine there.
I played many a Space Invader game there.
Yeah, right.
Back in the day. And then I would go over to Madigan's, and boy, I thought I was the highest, that was the highest line you could possibly.
Well, I started at Madigan's, then I got promoted to J. Crew.
Oh, nice.
No, what I'm saying, J. Riggins. Remember J. Riggins?
Yeah, right.
But Madigan's used to be one of the anchor stores.
That was a big deal.
Of course, with Goldblatt's. But yeah, my dad would say, why don't you go to Madigan's? Why don't you buy a turtleneck at Madigan's?
You go get out of that leprechaun suit and go.
Go to Madigan's.
Go buy some normal clothes.
Or Corvettes.
And then your dad would say to your mom, there's something wrong with that boy.
Yeah, don't give him the key to get back in either.
Let's move. Let's move again. He keeps finding us.
There was always bins packed in my house. I never could figure it out.
Yeah.
So you're going to, you're preparing now. So now you're going to call back around 10-ish. What are you going to, be en route then?
A bunch of us. No, we should be there. No, actually, you know, we'll just be leaving then.
Okay.
Because a bunch of us, the big WGN celebrities that'll be on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We're still waiting to hear those names.
We're assembling here and we're going to be leaving. Bozo is preparing. That's the big behind the scenes thing right now is that, Bozo is preparing right now. He's in his Bozo dressing room, the same Bozo dressing room that Bob Bell used, by the way. Exactly the same. So he's preparing right now.
Wow.
And when Bozo emerges, then we'll all pile into the WGN neon that we're driving in.
Well, just remember, Dean, as elevated and as enhanced as your ego may be, you are still number two because a clown is number one.
Oh, very definitely. I'm telling you, if Tom Skilling takes the back seat to anybody, then you could be sure that all the rest of us.
Yeah, I heard Tom on the news the other day. Yeah, I'm doing a clinic, so I can't make it. Sorry, Ray.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Bye, guys.
Patrick Elwood, genuine Southside Irish.
Right.
He's going to be there. Ray Cortopassi, Dina Bear from the Midday News, Tanya Francisco, Lauren Jiggets, and the one and the only Brona Tamoti.
Oh, Brona. She'll be drinking and she'll be singing and she'll be dancing. And with Dean O. Richards. Well, have a good time there, Dean, and you'll be calling us in about 45 minutes or so, around 10 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll see.
And you'll be having some fun over there at the Southside Irish Parade. And now it's even more fun for me because I can picture exactly where it is on the Southside, over on Western and 103rd.
You know what? You should do the whole show in that fake brogue.
Oh, I'm sure that'll make your listeners really happy.
Just to see if it's possible that you could be even more annoying to the Sunday morning listeners.
Oh, Dean, don't challenge me, my friend.
Do people know the text line if they'd like to text in?
Oh, they know it already. Oh, my goodness. The computer right now is smoking. Oh, Jim's on, radio's off.
Sorry, I disagree. I find Jim very entertaining.
Well, you're one of the few. I don't even find myself interested.
Ladies and gentlemen, show your support. Show your support for Elton.
Listen Elton anyway.
Jim. Listen anyway.
Listen anyway. Yeah, there's no better phrase.
Going to kill you for 1 week?
No kidding. Dean will be back, and the best part is we won't even tell him I'm going to be on the show next week with you.
Oh, that's right.
We won't even tell them that.
We have a special show next week. We have a very special broadcast next week.
Okay, Dino. Well, we'll, or I should not say Dino. I should say Odin. We'll see Dino Richards. About 10 o'clock or so.
Okay.
All right, my friend.
All right. That sounds fine. May the wind be at your back.
And say hi to Brona for me.
Goodbye.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. We'll be back after this. No switching. And that little whistle can only mean one thing. Good morning, Dave Schwann.
Good morning, Elton.
How you doing?
Nice sunny morning.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice, beautiful day today.
In the 50s, a big change from yesterday.
Oof. I was downtown last night. We went to the Lyric Opera, and it was cold last night walking back to the parking lot.
Yeah, woo-hoo. It would have been. It would have been. Well, it's actually a little chilly to the location we're headed to for the far-flung forecast.
We are far-flinging, so fling it, my friend.
We go way up to Nome, Alaska.
Ooh.
Not Rome, but Nome. Nome. Population, they're just one person short of 3,700 people. 3,699. Nome was incorporated April 9th of 1901. And the reason we mention Nome is that it is the destination of an annual event known as the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race.
The dog races!
Which is underway as we speak.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It is underway as we speak. It was canceled, like everything else, a couple of years ago because of COVID. But they're back in action, and they are actually a couple, 3 days away from Nome. Here is why. They start in Anchorage. It's over 700 miles from Anchorage to get to Nome.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, and in one state. And the reason this race came about is because it's based on or influenced by the drive to get a serum for diphtheria to Nome in the winter of 1925.
You mean people actually trusted a vaccine?
Yes.
Wow, that's strange.
The winter of 1925, there was just an epidemic of diphtheria in Nome. They were cut off from the rest of the world by whiteouts and blizzards and everything else. And the only way they could get that life-saving serum was through dog sleds, and they made it. And
700 miles.
One of the heroes, one of the dog heroes of this is a dog named Balto, and another dog that doesn't get as much credit as Balto, named Togo.
There was a cartoon. There was an animated film called Balto.
Yes, there was.
I remember that.
It was based on that, but the dogs Balto and Togo were among the first to get this serum successfully to Nome in 1925, where it was very desperately needed. So from that point on now, this Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race follows the route that the others did to bring that serum to Nome.
Wow. Interesting.
So Nome, Alaska, they'll be there in a couple of days. They actually started last week. That's how long it takes. But we have 23 degrees light snow in Nome. You'd think it would be, unbelievably chilly there.
Yeah, you always hear about Nome, Alaska as one of those areas that are, when you were trying to make a metaphor for a really terribly cold place.
Yeah.
It's always Nome, Alaska.
Nome, Alaska.
I've been to Anchorage. I've been to Alaska.
Anchorage is beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. Yeah. We've been to Alaska two times, in fact. We did the cruise by the glaciers and everything.
Sure, sure.
Loved it there.
Yeah. Haven't been to Nome, but I've been to Anchorage, and a not-missed thing, Denali National Park.
Yes.
Gotta see it.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Well, nice one. I love that.
Okay.
I'm gonna see if I can get an igloo at Nome. Do they have an Airbnb of igloos?
I would imagine they might have. Well, Airbnbs, I don't know about igloos.
Yeah, right. Well, Dave, you know what? We can just slide right into your news.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Or download the WGN radio app and stream us live.
We have 30 degrees at 9:31. Good morning. I'm Dave Schwann. The news is sponsored by News Nation. A Russian airstrike on a Ukrainian military base kills 35 people and injures over 130. Iowa plays Purdue this afternoon in the Big Ten tournament, and we'll know who's in the NCAA tournament later today. Looking at WGN traffic, we have a couple accidents. First in Elgin on Highland Avenue and Route 31. Also on Route 53, a stalled pickup truck blocking the right lane on 53 northbound, which is just south of Rand Road. Police activity on the southwest side, closing Kedzie in both directions between 31st and the Stevenson. And delays on the southbound Red Line trains after police activity that was taking place earlier this morning in Granville. 35 people are dead, over 130 wounded, after a Russian airstrike on a military training base, which hosted NATO military drills. This is taking place about 15 miles from the border with Poland. A Polish church on the north side will hold another donation drive today for Ukrainian refugees and people still in Ukraine. Volunteers at St. Hyacinth Basilica in Avondale are collecting everything from essential clothing to over-the-counter medications. And severe weather hit portions of the northern and central areas of Florida this morning. Winds of over 100 miles an hour were reported in Ocala. So far, no reports of injuries. A tornado was confirmed touchdown about 60 miles, however, north and east of the town of Crescent City. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center: mostly sunny today and a little warmer, high of 51. Partly cloudy tonight, low 35. Partly sunny tomorrow and a high of 56. We have 33 now at O'Hare. I'm Dave Schwann on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Lyric Opera of Chicago invites you to experience the blockbuster passion of Tosca, the thrilling tale of a woman who lives for art but is willing to sacrifice everything for love, is brought to life by Puccini's lush and familiar music. Featuring the Lyric Opera Orchestra and Chorus and a brilliant cast starring Michelle Bradley and Russell Thomas. The grand-scale spectacle of Tosca is on stage at Lyric March 12th to April 10th in a new-to-Chicago production. Get your tickets today at lyricopera.org.
Here's a little ad I wrote. You might want to do this note for note. Don't worry. Look happy. MainStreet312.com. The dentists in Barrington at MainStreet312.com have for you, the new patient, a teeth cleaning and fluoride treatment and full set of x-rays, plus a treatment plan for $79. $79 for you, the new patient. You think you're going to need more than just that? Don't worry. You won't need to get your teeth cleaned here and then implants there and then maybe clear aligners somewhere else. Doctors Patani and Menault are experts at the art and science of family dentistry. Remember, this is not discount dentistry. They do great work under one roof in Barrington at a discounted price for you, the new patient. You've put this off long enough. You'll feel good the minute you make that call. 847-381-5958. Call 847-381-5958 or click on MainStreet312.com. Let's brighten that smile and look happy.
Improving your home can be easy. Fill all your home improvement needs with one visit to the free home show this weekend at the Kane County Fairgrounds. Don't miss your best chance to save time and money with huge show discounts on the latest home products and services, and speak with experts who help you with your upcoming projects. From interiors to exteriors, from decor to outdoor, you will find it all at the Free Admission Home Show this weekend at the Kane County Fairgrounds. For details, visit KaneCountyHomeShow.com. That's KaneCountyHomeShow.com.
Rely on businesses that have stood the test of time. WGN Radio turns 100 this year, and our long-running partnership with Mega Pros has been going on for four decades. For all your home improvement needs, click on megapros.com.
DraftKings, a casino queen sportsbook, is officially live with mobile sports betting right here in the Lincoln State. To celebrate Illinois going mobile, new customers can bet just $5 on any team of your choice. Get $200 in free bets instantly. It's that simple. Sign up in front of the bean, sitting on your couch, your grandma's couch. As long as you're in Illinois, you can sign up right from the palm of your hand and get free bets instantly. Head to the DraftKings and Casino Queen Sportsbook app now to check out all the great promotions and features, including same-game parlays. It's safe, secure, and reliable. Download the DraftKings and Casino Queen Sportsbook app now. Use promo code WGN. Bet just $5 on any team of your choice and get $200 in free bets instantly. It's that simple with promo code WGN. This week at DraftKings and Casino Queen Sportsbook.
21 plus, Illinois only. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-426-2537.
It seems like there's a new headline every day that gives you reason to worry, maybe even panic. But when it comes to your investments, the last thing you want to do is make big decisions when emotions are running high. John Williams here for Tom Fortino of the Alpha Wealth Group. Tom understands that when it comes to your money, it's difficult to separate your emotions from your investments, but you can. That's why he's here to help. Give Tom a call. He can analyze your current portfolio and offer custom solutions that meet your specific needs and goals. Don't let politics dictate your retirement. Call Tom today and schedule a complimentary consultation. Call 630-934-1855, 630-934-1855, or visit alphawealthgroup.com. And listen to This Week in Wealth, Sunday mornings at 630 on WGN.
Advisory services through Retirement Wealth Advisors, LLC, a SEC-registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through Alpha Wealth Group, licensed in Illinois.
The world's foremost authority on daylight saving time talks about how it affects us and what folks like me who take 6 months to adjust can do to cope. Monday morning, starting at 6, which will feel like 7, of course.
Tomorrow morning at 6. On
WGN. As usual, I always like to do some of the same kind of regular segments that Dean does, and one of the most popular segments that Dean has been doing over the last couple of years has been the weekly COVID update segment with Dr. Kevin Most. Good morning, Dr. Kevin.
Hey, Jim.
There he is. Good morning.
I just heard the beep. How are you doing?
Well, I just remember the last time we were on, I was on with Dean and you. I had said if when I host, I wasn't sure if you wanted to come on. This was you and Dean have such a great rapport, but you said, oh, geez, I always thought that you just didn't want to talk to me. Of course I want to talk to you. So I just, so you know, I kept my promise, and here you are.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. It was such a smooth transition right there, too. You know?
Wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, nobody ever wants me to sound good. We're almost celebrating the two-year anniversary of COVID. It was around March 11th, where everything began to shut down and the lockdown began. Everything just fell like dominoes. It was 2 years ago right now.
Yeah, Jim, and if you think about what's gone on in those 2 years, just unbelievable. When we look at what the advances that have been made in the medical conditions of it, and unfortunately the impact that it's made just in all our communities with, you know, just our population overall.
Well, what I'd like to ask you is, let's go in the Wayback Machine. 2 years ago, on March 12th, we are very serious now. There's this new virus that we're just learning about. We've gotten some information about it, but it's still kind of a wild card. When you look back 2 years ago, and now you're sitting here in 2022, what are you most surprised about and what you are most disappointed about? Now, I think we all have to be very impressed that within 8 months, we got a vaccine. I don't think anybody expected to get a vaccine within 8 months, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So let's take that off the table, because that was an amazing and an impressive achievement. But let's look at some of these other issues that you could not have predicted. But what were you kind of thinking when you first heard about this? How long did you think it was going to last? And what were your initial impressions, if you can remember?
Oh, yeah. You know, initially it was that uncertainty of what's going to happen and really how big is this going to be? Because we were all so unclear. We were unclear as far as would it go through the communities? Would it be kind of isolated? Would it burn out as the weather warmed up? And certainly we found that that wasn't the case. Which
as the president, as the president predicted.
Yeah.
Remember, he was saying it was going to be gone by Easter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was that total uncertainty. And I guess if you said, what are we most proud of? You know, certainly the vaccine is one thing. But I have to say the resiliency of the workforce and healthcare providers is the thing that just is absolutely amazing to me. And I don't even think people really understand the full breadth and the impact of that.
Yeah, and I think you have. We owe a great, great debt and just a bow and to everybody in the healthcare industry. Not only have they worked amazingly hard and showed the compassion that drove them into that profession in the first place, but then sadly, overall in the medical profession, the distrust you would, or I guess what you would call it, in terms of the vaccine that so many people in the country have adopted, that has to have been frustrating from your standpoint to actually have something that could help people, and then people were voluntarily not taking it. I think, were you shocked at the amount of people that decided not to take the vaccine?
100%. You know, because this isn't like a flu vaccine. You know, flu vaccine, certainly we have about 30,000, 35,000 deaths from flu. This was, you know, something much more serious. So it absolutely kind of blew me away. You know, and it still does. I mean, we still have patients coming in with COVID that are unvaccinated. And again, I'm proud of the empathetic care and how our caregivers can still, you know, treat them professionally, even with the sense of frustration of why did you get vaccinated? And we don't bring that up. We just make sure that we're treating them, you know, appropriately.
Now, if you were sitting in a room with your colleagues 2 years ago and there were no microphones and just you in a room and you guys are talking in, you know, brass tacks, would you have predicted at that time, given the uncertainty that you mentioned, did you expect this to last more than 2 years in your heart of hearts?
No way.
No way, no. Really. You really didn't. No. Even with the uncertainty, you didn't. You expected it to fade away much quicker, huh?
Yeah, because you have to remember, our initial information of this, right, this was a coronavirus. And I'm like, oh, wait, okay. Well, we have a lot of coronaviruses that cause the common cold, and we can tolerate them, and we do well. What is so different here? So I think the uncertainty at that point was, okay, guys, it's a coronavirus. Let's get ready. We're going to be ready for this. But then as you started to see the impact of the spread across the world and the impact of it wasn't a simple coronavirus, obviously. I mean, it causes major damage to people. And that was the part that was like, wow, that got everyone's attention as quickly as possible.
I think one reason why this segment with you and Dean has been so informative and popular is because you have always, I feel, been very forthright, very honest, and said things how you feel and have given the most updated information. As a doctor in the medical profession, I think what we have to do with COVID, if we don't learn lessons from COVID, we have wasted an opportunity. Because while difficult as this is, there are always lessons to be learned. And I think one of the lessons that we need to learn is how to communicate better. And I, as I said, I think what's made this segment, you know, an important segment and one that why Dean always probably does it is because you have done a very good job of laying out the information that we know at the time. And we've known now on a national and even international basis that a lot of this misinformation or this distrust has come from a poorly integrated communication process or plan. So now moving forward, even though we're not done with this pandemic, and I know we're taking off masks, I'm still a little leery of that. I'm still wearing my two masks. But have you learned anything about how to better communicate to the public or to your patients, given what you've learned and how the information has been dispensed during COVID?
Yeah, Jim, you know, and you hit it right on the head. If you look back and go, okay, look what came out of the FDA. Look what's come out of the CDC. Look what's come out of the White House. You know, the information that has come out has been scattered, often incomplete. And what happens there is you lose confidence in the healthcare profession. And I think we had that. And I think during that time, that's some of the reason why we lost confidence in individuals getting the flu vaccine. So I think really a couple things for us. One is we need to explain things more simply to make sure that we're talking it at a level that everyone can understand. We need to make sure that we have data that is as accurate as possible. And we have to make sure, probably more importantly, what are the questions that the people have versus what is the information we're giving them? What do they want to know versus what we're telling them? And certainly, we've learned a lot for this through this, and we will certainly be much better for the next upcoming pandemic, not only in communication, but also in healthcare providers, what we're going to do, hospital capacity, what we're going to do. And we learned quite a bit.
Well, hopefully you have, because I used to work in the public relations industry, and when I would talk to executives and talk to people that I was media training or clients, I would always say, we've got to express this, we've got to communicate this as if you are telling this to your grandmother. You've got to get down to a very basic, and I think what happened was that doctors initially were using medical speak on the public, and the public does not understand that. They don't understand the scientific method. They don't understand. They're looking for answers quickly, and obviously in the medical community, you take your time. You are testing. You are reevaluating. That's part of the scientific method, but the average person doesn't get that, and I think that was where the big disconnect was, is there was a lot of medical speak. The doctors at the head of all this that were making all these statements were talking to, like they were talking to them themselves, as opposed to talking to the average citizen. And hopefully that's the message that gets through, is that you've got to speak at a level that people can understand. And to your point, like you said about the questions, and answer the questions that are on their minds. So
yeah, 100%. And I think you summed it up very well there. You know, I think early on people were talking, like you said, in a lot of science talk and medical talk. And were they doing that because they felt they needed to do that to get the confidence of people? And I disagree. I think, you know, making sure that someone understands. We always tell people, if you're going to communicate well with patients, you should be talking at a fifth grade level. Now, that is not to be mean to patients.
Exactly.
That is to make sure that we have a good communication and we set patients at ease so that they can ask questions and that we understand, boy, I just told them that, but obviously I used medical acronyms. Or I used language that they didn't understand. So that feedback is probably one of the most important things that we teach all, even medical students, of what they can do in their communication style.
Dr. Kevin Most is joining me here today. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side of the break, we're going to ask some of the questions that you've been texting for Dr. Most. And I'm going to ask Dr. Most to put on his Columbo trench coat, because I need your medical detective skills. Because over the last 2.5 weeks, I tested positive for COVID, but I don't really know if I had it. How's that for a tease? We'll be back after this. This is Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. WGN. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning at WGN 720 AM. Let me just clarify something, because I'm getting a lot of texts here. And doctor, if you can help me with this. We are not suggesting, or I was not suggesting, that grandparents or grandmothers don't understand things. What I was trying to say was, you have to explain, instead of talking in medical terms and acronyms and 17-letter words that no one understands, you have to communicate your message in a very straightforward, understandable way. And the idea of using the grandmother is not that grandmothers or older people don't understand things. It's that they are a group that you would say, when I want to talk to somebody in very straightforward terms, this is the way I talk. So it's understandable. It has nothing to do with their understanding or their intellect.
100%, or their age.
Yeah, this was not. I was not condemning older people or grandparents. I was just saying that you have to speak in relatable, understandable terms, as if you were speaking to a 5-year-old kid who doesn't have anyone who doesn't have a mastery of the medical jargon. You want to speak in understandable, relatable terms. That's all I was saying.
We've learned over and over again that we know that if patients understand exactly what we're asking them to do or exactly why we're doing a test or taking a medication, we know compliance goes through the roof. We know that if we talk in medical jargon, that they have that uncertainty of what was that message, and compliance goes down and healthcare gets impacted. So it's a simple message that, and I would tell patients, if you don't understand what the doctor is saying, stop and ask questions. We are not offended by people asking questions. We appreciate that because we'd rather have everyone on the same playing field as we move forward in any healthcare decisions.
I come into my doctor's office with a list of questions. When I visit my doctor, I have a list of questions and I read off all of them, and whether it is redundant or whether I want to get the answers to those questions.
It's one of the best things to do, Jim, because often when you get in the office and you're flustered and they're doing your blood pressure and they're checking things and you forget some of the questions and you get in your car and you go, oh, I meant to ask this. So certainly walking in with a list of whatever your healthcare concerns are is something I recommend, as well as if you're taking a medication and you notice a side effect, make sure you share that with them at the appointment.
You know, that's just good as a normal just advice to seeing a doctor in general. But certainly when we're talking about very sophisticated and unknown, in the case of COVID, unknown circumstances, the more you can use everyday language of what it is and how it impacts people, the better you are going to be able to communicate your message. You know what? I was teasing the fact that I did test positive for COVID. We don't have much time. It's always so fun to talk to you. But I'm going to be on with Dean next week, so maybe I can sneak in my question during that.
Sure. When, you know, whenever. I'm always here for you guys.
Very good. Dr. Kevin Most, thank you so much for taking time on a Sunday, and enjoy your St. Patrick's Day celebration.
You got it, Jim. Take care. We'll talk next week.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning at WGN 720 AM. But listen anyway. And if you're a fan of Dean Richards, he's never too far away. In fact, he's right here on the phone getting ready to do his parade duty today as a part of the WGN TV crew. Hello, Dean.
Hi, good morning to you.
Hello there, Dean. Shorten Brigada, how you doing there, my friend?
It's a beautiful day. The sun is shining, and I've got the wind at my back.
So now, where are you? Where are you? Are you on your? Where is the float? Is the float down over on the south side? Will you be driving in the float on the highway, or what are you be doing?
The float is downtown. Is at the parade route.
Oh, I see
the float there. So Bozo and the other WGN people all are meeting here at the TV station, and we'll be disembarking in just a few minutes.
So will people be actually able to see Bozo sitting on by the window on an SUV or something, or what?
Yeah, like, we'll be on Dan Ryan and shortly. That's so, always a lot of fun when we're driving on the expressway or wherever we're going, and you know how you glance over at the next car and you know, they look over and there's Bozo. And they get second looks. We've had people on the expressway, yeah, 55 miles an hour, roll down their window,
right,
shouting at Bozo how much they love Bozo.
So it literally is a clown car.
It literally is a clown car. It literally is a clown car, yes.
And with you and all the other WGN people, how many clowns can you fit into a car?
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. At the moment, it's just me because nobody has arrived yet. Everybody's late.
Oh my God!
And Bozo is, still preparing.
How long does this transformation take?
It takes 3 hours to become Bozo.
Are you serious?
It's quite a.
I thought you just strapped down a. You just laced up a couple of big shoes.
Well, that's part of the long process is getting those shoes on. That is definitely part of it. But, you know, he's got to do his hair.
Of course.
That takes a while.
He's got a stylist.
He does have a stylist. He does have somebody who's been here since like 6 o'clock in the morning working with him.
Did I use the white ruffle or the red ruffle?
Yeah, I told you I want red M&M.
Wow. So, I mean, seriously, what is it like to play second fiddle? I mean, can you feel the Bozo effect when you go out in public and you're standing next to him?
Oh, my gosh, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, this show has been off the air
right.
for 20 years.
Off the air?
Bozo went off the air in 2001. So it's been off the air. I guarantee you,
wow.
when we're waiting to go, the biggest crowds are around Bozo. It's not just older people.
No.
You know, there are plenty of people who grew up watching the show that are, they can't even breathe when they see Bozo. They're so excited when they see Bozo. But I have seen on parades, when we're going down the street, you would think we had Bruce Springsteen on our float. People are like, Bozo, Bozo, like thousands of people are shouting and chanting for Bozo.
Well, maybe you should wear a red nose, just for the heck of it.
My nose is red enough as it is. I come by my red nose naturally.
Well-earned.
Well-earned. Well-earned from many years of abuse. But no, there's only one and only Bozo, and I love that people, you know, still after all these years are still so in love with this character.
Well, it's been a part of so many people's childhoods, and the term, you know, I mean, aside from even Chicago, you know, don't be a Bozo. I mean, Bozo the clown, he was the clown,
right?
Right. I mean, there was right. Emmett Kelly. You know, before him, but then there was Bozo.
Well, you know, there were plenty of Bozo shows all around the country over the years. None as popular as WGN's because we were a superstation, and people could watch our Bozo show, you know, all over the country. And it was on for 40 years. No Bozo show was on as long as ours. None was as popular as ours. There was a 10-year waiting list to get tickets to come and see the show. And it was unprecedented, really, in the history of Chicago television. And it's just absolutely amazing that to me that people, after all these years of being off the air, that people still have such fondness for the, you know, for the memories. I think it brings back a happier time to people. It reminds them of when they were younger. It reminds them of, you know, when they had no responsibilities. A lot of people tell me now they watch our Bozo specials that we air.
Oh, definitely.
And their kids watch. Their kids weren't even born when, you know, when Bozo was on the air, but their kids have gotten into it. The kids are like mesmerized by this.
Well,
the style of television that Bob Bell and Joey D. Marshall Burdine and Roy Brown and Don Sandberg, that all these legends of Chicago television brought.
Well, that's what's interesting, too, when you think about even the concept. I was watching some of the St. Patrick's Day parade yesterday, and you're going to be on the WGN float on the Southside Irish Parade on Western, kicking off at Western and 103rd on the South Side.
Yeah, but, if we ever get there, if anyone ever shows up.
Right. Well, you're going to have the float to yourself.
Apparently, I'll be putting on the big shoes.
There you go. But it's really interesting. This you're talking about this the Bozo effect and how it's made lifetime memories for people. What there's something quaint in this in the 21st century, in this high tech world, in this electric car world. There's something quaint, and people still obviously cling to it. About a parade, about people standing and going outside and watching people simply walk and wave and maybe play in a marching band or dress up. But, you know, it seems right. like kind of such a throwback kind of a tradition that might be out of date And yet, my gosh, I'm expecting. Do you have any idea what the expectations of the crowds are going to be on the south side today?
I don't know. I got to think that it's going to be through the roof because of the pandemic. There has been no parade for the last. There have been no parades for the last 2 years. So this is the first. Well, yesterday was the downtown parade. But this will be the first Southside parade in 2 years, and I think people are really looking forward to being back out there with their friends and celebrating together the communal experience of it all. The Southside parade has a reputation of being rowdy and out of control. They corralled that in many years ago. So it's still fun and celebratory, but it's families and people get together for like open houses. That you'll find that all over the South Side today. People are neighborhood blocks are getting together and celebrating together. It's a really lovely family style event.
And we also should mention
nobody from WGN is on time. Not that I'm getting mad about it.
No. Well, you're hiding your anger well, which is good.
Yeah.
Well, and we should not forget that on the northwest side, there is also a parade in the Norwood Park area near Northwest Highway. So if you're on the northwest side and you're a proud Irish person or just someone who enjoys a good party, go out that side as well. I think it's around Northwest Highway and Raven around the Talcott area there near Immaculate Conception, that kind of whole area there. So both sides
maybe
of our city.
Maybe one of these days we'll do that parade.
Yeah.
We'd like to get all over the place.
But definitely.
This is a big, super special for me to be in the Southside Parade since that's where I grew up.
Yeah, very cool.
Just literally a half a block from my house. I'm warning the people now, whoever lives in the house where I grew up, I want to stop by. I want to detour the entire parade route over just one block onto Artesian Avenue and point out to everybody where I grew up. How did Dean Richards get to be the man that he is? It all happened in that house.
Well, there's a
radio station.
There is a plaque there, right?
There should be.
There is a plaque on the front door, I believe.
I've got a spare one I can take over there.
Yeah, you have that. Don't you have that Walk of Fame thing in your garage?
Let's not talk about that.
Well, Dean, here's an idea. Why don't you call back at noon or at 12:30 when there's actually a parade? And and if there's anyone from WGN there.
Yeah, I may just be taking the janitor and
Gosh, that's so funny. Well,
now everybody is super late for the show.
That is hilarious. Well, do you think it might be better? Who's coming up?
I'm seeing Ray Cortopassi.
There's
here.
Ray.
Ray Cortopassi.
All right.
Coming up. Yep.
Well, because he's a new guy in the block, he's got he can be fashionably 15 minutes late.
Exactly. I'm on with WGN Radio, Ray, and I'm complaining about everybody being late. You're the first one here.
Ray is the most punctual of the late.
Yeah, and then Brona Tumulty, she's out someplace practicing her fake Irish brogue.
She's dancing and singing.
Right. If you actually talk to her, she sounds like she's from Brooklyn. If you ever met her in real life, she sounds like she's from Brooklyn. Then she gets on the air and suddenly, we're here at a scene of...
Hey, Dane, whatever works, you go with.
She's going to be competing with Bozo today.
Oh, there's no question.
Somebody actually from Ireland here.
No kidding.
Is going to be, wait a minute, I'm seeing Lauren Jiggetts.
Okay.
Lauren Jiggetts is pulling up.
Well, they're all coming in at the fashionable 15 to 20 minutes late,
Yeah, far everybody except Brona.
The queen, the St. Patrick's Day queen isn't here. She's going to show up.
Right.
She'll stroll in about 10:35. Oh, what time did you say you were coming?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you...
this is going to be a fantastic day.
Well, why don't you survey, and if it's better to call at noon or at 12:30, then just let us know where we can actually get a little feel for the parade.
We'll see what's going on then.
All right, very good. Thanks for calling in, Dean. I'm sure your listeners are very happy to hear your voice.
I'm sure that they're enjoying your quality program.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you still have on the program today? What's coming up on the Dean Richards Sunday Morning Show today?
Well, I'm going to talk about last night. I had quite an artsy week. I was at both the Goodman Theater to see the Notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci. And then last night, my wife and I also went to see opening night of Tosca at the Lyric Opera. So I'm going to talk a little about that.
You fancy pants.
Yeah. And then we're also going to talk to a woman who this is, Women's History Month. And we're going to talk about a local woman who has started a very important charity several years ago called Gigi's Playhouse. Helping the Down syndrome.
Sure, on the northwest side, I believe. Right?
Yeah, so we're going to talk to Nancy Gianni. We're going to talk to a news guy who we've both worked with in our careers, Charlie Meyerson, about the new responsibilities that we have in terms of how we digest news, and just a whole bunch more. I got lots of interesting stuff to talk about, and we have Dean Richards from the parade.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We'll see who else shows up for it. Tell Charlie Meyerson I said hello.
Yeah, you guys used to be, you guys were doing smooth jazz together, weren't you?
Well, even before that, we worked at a station in Aurora together, WMRO.
Oh, right.
He was my, we did the DITM show, Dean in the Morning show, together. I was the host. It was like a West Suburban WGN, and I was the host, and he was my newsman. And, you know, both of us were just, you know, starting off our careers back then. And then we worked at WNUA Smooth Jazz. And then he was at WGN for a little while. And we also worked there.
Yeah, I was Charlie's intern.
Excuse me. I have to break in. I have to give you this big update.
Uh-oh.
Guess who has just shown up.
Is it Brona?
Brona! He has shown up on WGN Radio.
Get her on. Put her on.
And can they say hello to you? Is that all right? Of course. We're live right now. Yes.
Brona.
Jim Corona.
Brona.
Hey,
I am one of your biggest fans. I love when you say any word with an ing at the end of it.
Oh, God. The G's are overrated.
Dancing and singing and flipping. I've always said I don't think they assign you any story unless it's going to have an ing word in it.
Yeah, or a care or a perk or anything.
Well, you're going to be you're going to be the queen of the parade today.
I don't know about that.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding? Right now, Dean and I were talking. It's between you and Bozo. Who's going to be the most popular on that float? And I'm betting on Brona.
That's quite a dilemma. I think it's going to be Bozo.
Well, we'll see. If you need to, borrow his wig.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
Have fun out there today.
To Dean. Bye.
Have fun.
Okay, here's what I have to point out that I told you Ray Cortopassi is here.
Right.
And Lauren Jiggetts and I are all, like, with, cheap St. Patrick's Day stuff that we bought at Walgreens to wear.
Right.
Mona is the only one who looks fairly dignified.
Of course.
She's got a touch of green.
She's got a
nice, like, tasteful amount of green. The rest of us look like we fell asleep on the St. Patrick's Day aisle at Walgreens.
She's going to be celebrating St. Joseph's Day, the forgotten holiday. Right.
Yeah, that's the 18th, isn't it?
The 19th, yeah.
19th, okay.
Yeah, right. the forgotten saint.
All right, Jim, I've had enough of you. It's time for us to go.
Okay, very good. I've had enough of you, too. We'll talk to you around noon or 12:30 then, Dean, and give us a little St. Patrick's Day feel of what's it like on the south side. Thank
you,
Dino.
See you later, buddy. Bye.
Dean Richards checking in, not even at the Southside Irish Parade yet. He'll be there soon. That's the goal. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN. We'll take a quick break and be back after this. No switching.
WGN.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but listen anyway. On the other side of the news, I'm going to talk to Andy Mazur here. About the return of baseball this week, we're going to start to get some spring weather. And thankfully, within the next couple of weeks or so, we're going to have some spring training games. And then we're going to officially welcome in spring with the baseball season, which for a while seemed like it wasn't going to happen. But thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and both sides came together after a 99-day strike, or lockout, I should say. The owners locked out the players, but finally they came together with a bunch of negotiations and going to change the game somewhat in the next couple of years. So we'll talk to Andy Mazur about that. Oh, what I didn't do, I usually do this at the beginning of the show, but it was kind of busy at the very top of everything. Ah, yes. Officially christening the show with my favorite Glade spray air freshener. Today, using the Blooming Peony and Cherry. I usually use Cashmere Woods, but I've been leaning toward the Blooming Peony and Cherry. Kind of a nice spring-like scent. So going with that today. Did you move your clocks? Someone on the text said maybe the reason that so many people are late is because they didn't change their clocks. They were trying to get to the to the floats. Dean was the only one there, so maybe they weren't checking their changing their clocks. I'm one of those scary folks. I actually get up at 2 a.m. like you're supposed to, and I change the clocks at 2 a.m. That's how scary I am. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. We're going to go right tonight now to Mr. Dave Schwann with the news. Take it away, Schwanny. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning, WGN 720 AM. Want to talk to Andy Mazur, sports and baseball expert, about the thankfully return of baseball.
Yeah, how about that after almost 100 days?
And it was looking kind of strange there. The deadlines were always being pushed back, and then they would fall apart. The negotiations would fall apart, and it looked like this was going to drag into May.
Yeah, it had the appearance of that, and I think a lot of it had to do with MLB trying to sneak some things in at the last second on the Players Union, and the Players Union still having a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, I guess you could say, after the last collective bargaining agreement. They thought they came out the worst for it. But I guess it's a matter of perspective, because there's been some owners who said, yeah, we won, and then some players who said, yeah, we won, and both players and owners say we lost. I mean, so I guess the bottom line is that they're playing. Spring training facilities are open. Games will be playing this week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess here's my biggest question. I don't know about you. I would assume, and you've been you're a baseball broadcaster. Is baseball your favorite sport?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's mine too.
Yeah.
And I would have to say that I understand that, you know, all sports change. There never used to be a 24-second clock. You know, they've moved mm-hmm. the point after in a football game farther back. I mean, games always change the rules. And, you know, there used to be 16 games, you know, 14 games, now 16, now 17. Okay, I get that. But is the heart of baseball, is the core of being somebody that's worked in baseball, who is a fan of baseball, is the core of baseball that broken that so many different things are going to be happening? And give a little rundown as to what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I mean, this year the universal DH comes into play. So that's the first big issue that I think a lot of purists are having a hard time with. It was definitely the defining difference between the two leagues. The American League had it, the National League didn't, and you just kind of dealt with it. And I think the people that grew up watching the game and listening to the game and playing the game kind of appreciated, the pitcher having to hit in certain situations and forcing a manager to make decisions. Unlike in the American League, a pitcher gets shelled in the first inning. You can let him go seven innings
right.
because turn a bat never comes up. So that's the thing. That's the biggest thing that's coming in this year as far as changes to the actual game itself. There'll be advertising patches on the uniforms for the first time ever.
Oh, really? Like race car drivers?
Oh, yeah. But just I think it's just going to be limited to one, like they do at the the NBA has them on their jerseys, and the NHL
yeah.
has them on their helmets.
Yeah.
So that's cosmetic. And part of the agreement now is that the Major League Baseball, the owners, have a window of 45 days to inform the union of potential rule changes. And I do believe that next year, 2023, you're going to see a pitch clock.
Right.
You're also going to see larger bases.
Now, could you explain what's the thought about a larger base?
So it goes from 15 inches in diameter to 18. So what they're thinking is it's going to encourage more stolen bases, because with replay in effect right now, you've noticed several times where a guy will slide head first or feet first to the base and slide just a half an inch past it, and the infielder keeps the tag on, and you're out.
Oh, and then you fall off. You get your hand off the base, right?
So now there's a little bit longer landing period that you can grab to the base, and you can kind of hang on to it. So I think they're going to try to reward runners for that. So that's the base situation, and they're going to talk about banning the shift. Now, not completely, but they're going to have a certain amount of infielders to. I believe the wording was you cannot have an infielder with his feet in the outfield grass.
So no short center fielder, so like, no in short 16, center fielder. Like in 16 and softball.
Right, no rover of one of those kind of players. So they're going to try to do that as well. I mean, to me, the shift is not as prevalent as everybody kind of thinks it is. It's prevalent for certain hitters.
Exactly.
Joey Gallo, who was with the Yankees with the Rangers before that, has been on social media kind of goofing about that because everybody puts the shift on for him because he's a dead pull hitter.
And like Carl Schwarber, too. The same.
He's a dead pull hitter. So that's going to be one of the changes coming through in 2023. Also, the draft lottery. I love this because... And I love this after the fact because I think the Cubs, the Astros, White Sox, and teams have benefited from quote-unquote tanking and getting yourself in a position where you have a real good draft choice high in the draft. So now basically what's going to happen is the 18 teams that don't make the playoffs are going to be put into a lottery. And the lottery in the NBA is the first few picks, and it's the first six picks in Major League Baseball. Where the worst team is going to have the best chance of getting the first pick, and the 18th team is going to have the worst possibility to get it. But how many times have we seen that kind of tilt a little bit in baseball? I mean, in basketball and in football, we've seen that happen. And I guess baseball more than basketball more than anything.
Yeah,
with Michael Jordan in 1984, when somehow Sam Bowie got chosen in front of him.
Oops.
Whatever the case may be there. But so that's going to kind of help things, I think. And the big issues for the players' union was money and wanting to pay players. And basically now they have the luxury tax threshold, which is meaning the amount that it's kind of the top. So if you go over a certain amount, you get taxed at 20% of whatever value you are over that limit. So the players wanted that limit to go up because they want more salary, obviously, for their players. And there were a lot of owners that were against it because, they felt like they couldn't compete. With the Steve Cohns now of the New York Mets, they have a special luxury tax in there for him now. It's the fourth tier, and it's no joke. I mean, it's like a $400 million threshold. The lower level teams. I mean, not the lower level, but the smaller market teams didn't want that. But that was part of the compromise. The minimum salary is going up to $700,000. It will climb to as high as $780,000 when this is all said and done. There's a pre-arbitration pool now. There's a service time granted to those that finished first in rookie of the year balloting. There's a number now of times that a player can be optioned in the same season. It used to be one option was the whole year. You still had options. You could go up and down as many times as the team wanted you to go up and down. You had to spend at least 10 days in the minors unless there was an injury call-up. So now it's a limit of 5. So you can't have a guy riding the express between Chicago and Des Moines more than 5 times.
And also the expanded playoffs. More teams will be making the playoffs.
Yeah, so it was ridiculous to think that they were going to have 14 teams because there's 30 major league teams. So you're looking at half the teams. So what are you playing 162 games for if you're only going to have half the teams eliminated? I mean, it's the same thing in the NHL. I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
Same story. But what it does, now they're going to go to 12. What it does is it brings more excitement to certain markets later in a year in September when your team thinks it has a chance.
Well, think about that. I mean, back in the 70s and 80s, I mean, it's so hard to grasp this now because every league has, wild cards and expanded playoffs. In baseball, there was only 4 teams.
Yep.
If you didn't come in first place, you were out of the playoffs. And think about it, especially in the 70s, when you had some dominant teams like the Oakland A's or the Reds. By May or June, they already were on their way to clinching.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, anyone else, you might want to go see a baseball game for the love of the game, but you knew you were not going to make the playoffs that year.
How about 1993 when the Dodgers finished with 104 wins and the Giants finished with 103
right.
in the West and,
and didn't make it?
They don't make the playoffs because they didn't finish first.
Yeah. So, but I guess the one thing when you're talking about the pitch clock and the bases and the DH, and what I find interesting about the DH is over the last 20 or 30 years, the suspicion was that the American League would drop the DH because it was this new thing and maybe it was past its prime. But oh, it seems in the last 10 or 15 years, all of a sudden, a new owners, they wanted more hitting. And so suddenly the tide shifted and it was like, no, the National League is going to get the DH as opposed to the American League dropping it. So I thought that was interesting. But I guess my biggest question is, as I said at the outset of this, is, you know, baseball sells itself and markets itself with all that Ken Burns nostalgia of Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and Ted Williams. And yet, so at one side, they're marketing the tradition of the game, but on the next, they turn their heads and they're changing the game radically.
Yeah.
Do you, as a longtime baseball fan, do you have a problem with that?
You know, theoretically, yeah, but you know, it's adapt or die. I mean, the sport is struggling with younger viewers and listeners. I mean, it's just not the sport that the young people gravitate to because, you know, from what I loved in about baseball early on in my life was a 2-1 ball game. You know,
I love a 2-1 ball game
because there was a lot of strategy, there was some great defense, there was some excellent work by a pitcher. But you know, that's not what sells tickets these days. What sells tickets these days is the quote unquote game experience, the ballpark experience, you know, the things that they do in between the innings and whatever it is to get some more offense and that, you know, people want to see and they want to cheer for offense, rather than, strikeouts. So, you know, philosophically, you know, you have to kind of adapt to the times. I mean, like you said, though, you know, the NBA had to adopt the shot clock because there were teams that were just, you know, the scores in the games were 55-53. You know, I mean, you want to get the games into the hundreds? Well, you know, make them shoot in 24 seconds and put in a three-point line and do those kind of things. So you have to adapt as you continue to try to appeal to the demographic that has the cash to spend. And it's the Gen Z's get now. I mean, I was at a convention the other day talking about this, and Gen Z, the group that's younger than the millennials,
right?
Baseball is like seventh on their list.
Yeah, I mean, like TikTok.
It's like esports and video games and things like that. They like more because they have it at their fingertips and they don't have to go anywhere or pay any money other than a subscription to whatever you're doing. To go to play an esport or to go and just play on Twitch with your friends, one of those things. So, in one respect, you can't blame baseball for trying to, capitalize on that. They're doing some other deals with TV, with Apple TV Plus. They're going to have some games that are going to start really early on Sundays. The Peacock Network is getting involved with some baseball as well. They're trying to expand into the streaming situations. Baseball was really bad about that. It was one of the last sports to stream their out-of-market games to people that wanted to see them due to blackout restrictions or moving away and those kind of things. So, you have to kind of get into the 2020s to be able to compete against the NFL and the NHL and not so much the NHL, but the NBA. For those advertising dollars and for the ticket revenue.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm just an old fogey, but to your point,
and I get you though. I mean, I enjoy
a 2-1 game, and I enjoy just the beauty of baseball was that there was no clock.
Yeah.
Thank God they got rid of those ghost runners.
Well, that's the thing, and all that other stuff. Celebrate the fact that they're playing 9-inning doubleheaders now, and there's no ghost runner at second base.
Let's face it, that 2020 season with 60 games, you cannot name a team a World Series winner after a 60-game season. I'm sorry.
Some would say it was harder because there was less margin for error. Each game counted as like 2.5.
I know, but why would I have to play? Then why should I play 162?
Well, I agree with you completely, especially if you're expanding the playoffs to 12. Let's say that all the series go to the last game. You could be playing baseball in Chicago or Detroit or whatever around Thanksgiving
for the
World Series, and that's not going to be fun.
Exactly. All right. Well, thanks, Andy. I just wanted to get your take on that. But baseball is back. So
that's the big thing, yeah.
Yeah. So praise be. The opening day play ball will be screened sometime soon. Thanks, Andy. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. playing that song, Thank Heaven for Little Girls. Not only is it Women's History Month in March, but that song is from a musical called Gigi. And I thought a good way to celebrate Women's History Month would be talking to a woman who has done some incredible and noteworthy work to add to this history of women and the things that they have been doing throughout our history that may have been overlooked going back hundreds of years, but maybe just going back some decades. And so I'm very happy to talk today with Nancy Gianni, who is the founder and the head of Gigi's Playhouse here in the Chicago area, which deals with Down syndrome. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hey, Elton Jim. So happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. I have to give you a little background. Some very good friends of mine, just in passing, my friend's wife, Laura, mentioned that they were going to Gigi's Playhouse event a few weeks ago, and I didn't know what that was. And so I just looked it up, and I saw the amazing work that Gigi's Playhouse does in the area of Down syndrome. And I said, wow, I said, the next time I'm on the radio, I'm going to call up Nancy Gianni and let her tell her story and explain exactly what the Gigi's Playhouse does and what your goals are, and let people know about the important cause that you are working for. So why don't you start here, the air is yours. Tell us your story, Nancy.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, thank you so much for even thinking about that. That's how acceptance happens. This is how awareness happens, is we all work together and you use your platform to help others. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. So, yes, yeah, so Gigi's Playhouse, so you talked about being in the Chicagoland area. We actually have 55 locations across the country and in Mexico, and we serve families in 81 countries. So with our free program. So let me tell you.
So explain how it started and what you do.
Absolutely. So Gigi's Playhouse, Gigi, is named after my daughter, Gigi. She was born with Down syndrome. She just turned 19. So we opened the very first playhouse when she was one, her first birthday party. We asked for donations to open this awareness center that we wanted to have. And what we wanted to do was, you know, when Gigi was born and they told us she had Down syndrome, there was, you know, condolences, no congratulations, no celebration. And here was this beautiful little girl that was, you know, beautiful in every way possible, but she had an extra chromosome and nobody was celebrating her. And nobody was celebrating, you know, individuals with Down syndrome. That's why the termination rate is so high, because there's so much negativity surrounded by that diagnosis. And I just really wanted to change that, Jim. I wanted people to be able to celebrate their diagnosis, celebrate their life and the life that they were going to have. And I wanted to open a place that was full of positive energy, that would empower the families, that would empower the kids, that would just bring a different viewpoint to Down syndrome. And that's what Gigi's was designed to do. So we opened it really as an awareness center, and it has now grown into an achievement center.
Now, so here you are, you just had this baby, and suddenly you are confronted with this. This is now going to be a part of your life. Did you have any background in putting together an organization? Or, I mean, did this happen over your kitchen table? I mean, how did you put all this together?
Yes, it did. Actually, it happened in my basement, and not with coffee, with a little bit of wine, and kind of put things together, got together with some other parents saying, you know what, we need to change this. We really need to change this if our kids are going to have a chance in this world. And that's where it started. And we've grown it into a sustainable replicable model. You know, everybody has come to me. We give, and everything we do is free. So we do one-on-one tutoring and literacy and math, speech therapy, career programs. We have Gigi University for our adults. Fitness programs. We have Gigi Fit, which is, you know, individuals with Down syndrome have low muscle tone. So they, like a diabetic needs insulin, our kids need fitness and they need that therapy. So we have a Gigi Fit program for everything from infants, because when you think about it, an infant, when you speak, people with Down syndrome have low muscle tone. So everything that comes naturally to all of us, they have to teach their body to do everything. You know, when a typical baby is born, you know, they're looking around, checking out the world. When our kids are born, they're literally having to teach their bodies how to suck, swallow, and breathe at the same time. Then they have to teach their bodies the mechanics of eating, of reading, everything that just comes naturally to us, they have to teach their bodies to do. When Gigi learned to walk, she couldn't jump. Think about that, Jim. I see people when they're at the park and with their kids or their grandkids, and I think, do you even know how blessed you are that your child can jump?
Wow.
You know, something we take for granted every single day. They are constantly teaching their bodies how to do these things. And that's throughout their whole life. So that's what Jesus does, is we give them those tools. We strengthen their bodies. We help them with the things that are harder for them in life so that they can go out and live in this beautiful world. But what we found is that we've worked the last 18 years really getting them ready for the world. And what we're finding is the world is not ready for them.
I was just going to say, I think not only do you have to prepare them for the world, but maybe, and perhaps, and we're going to take a quick break, and after this we can address this. I want to talk about how you are preparing the world for them. Not so much preparing them for the world, but I think maybe one of your bigger obstacles is preparing the world for them. And we're going to hear just how you've been doing that at Gigi's Playhouse. I'm talking to Nancy Gianni here at WGN. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. I'm talking to Nancy Gianni, who is the founder of Gigi's Playhouse, an organization dedicated to not only helping people with Down syndrome, but also helping to eliminate the stigma of Down syndrome. And that's what we were talking about here, Nancy. I'd just like to talk about some of the obstacles that you face and some of the solutions that you are bringing to get people to think about Down syndrome in a different way.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for giving us this platform and a chance to talk about this. So in 2014, we started to really see, and we've been seeing it all along, that the discrimination against our kids, the discrimination, you know, they wear their diagnosis on their face. And people see that. And people, to this day, Gigi, we could go, and Gigi could go to a Gigi's Playhouse opening or speak at an event in front of thousands of people. And still, when we walk through the airport, there's people staring at her, people laugh at her, people make fun of her. This has to stop. We right now we're in such a weird place in our world that we're sticking up for, you know, all kinds of great causes, but we're not sticking up for the people that have the most to teach us in life. And those are individuals with disabilities. People with disabilities make up the largest demographic in our world, in our country, anywhere. And yet we're still not giving them the platform that they deserve. You know, we've got people standing up for whether it's sexual orientation, whether it's race, cultures, whatever it is, we've got groups standing up for people, but we're still not stepping up for people with disabilities and people who may appear to be different. And what I want the world to know is every single one of us, you, me, every one of us, is seconds away from being different or loving someone who's different. It could be the birth of a baby or a grandbaby, a fall off of a bike, a medical diagnosis. But I can promise you, when differences strike in your family, and they will, you are going to want this world to be a more accepting place. And that's when we decided we were going to start a campaign called Generation G, hashtag Generation G. Generation G is just a conscious decision to be better every single day. Be generous, be kind, be accepting. And anybody can be Generation G. You could take the Generation G pledge at iacceptyou.org. That's our diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative for communities, for schools, for corporate. This is a time for us to step up for the people in this world that truly have the most to teach us. So I would love it if your listeners could go to iacceptyou.org and just take the Generation G Pledge of Acceptance. But take it. But I would ask that you don't take it alone. Take it with your grandkids. Take it with your kids. Take it with your coworkers. And really live it. Live the Generation G lifestyle. Just be kind.
So what happens? You said there were more than 50 locations of Gigi's Playhouses mm-hmm. around the country and even in Mexico. So what happens at one of these locations?
Oh, my goodness. Everything. Acceptance happens. So we provide free therapeutic and educational programming for individuals with Down syndrome, their families, and the entire community. You know, Gigi's is a place where you can walk into, learn about Down syndrome. You can volunteer. Everybody who walks in changes when they walk out. They understand the diagnosis more. They understand how strong our kids are and that they need a little bit of help. And when you go in there to help our kids, you end up helping yourself, because everybody comes in and says, you know what, you know, I came here, you know, to give back, and actually I'm getting more than I get. So it's a place of empowerment. It's a place of learning. So we have programs all day long for all of the kids, for the family members. Everybody's invited to Gigi. So that's, whether it's one-on-one tutoring and literacy and math, there's speech and communication programs, there's Gigi University. We have career training programs for the adults, Gigi Professional. We have Hugs and Mugs in Chicago, which is a great place. It's a store that's run by our adults with Down syndrome. So our Gigi University graduates then move into our store and do an 18-week internship in the store, learning career skills, learning customer service, being face-to-face with customers, all the skills they need to get out in the world and get a job. But the problem is the jobs aren't out there because people aren't hiring our kids, adults.
I was just going to ask, do you think that that one of the reasons that there's still a stigma is, for the most part, to your point, the average person may not come in contact with someone with Down syndrome. So, absolutely, like you said, you're walking through an airport and people are staring or they're making jokes. The initial reaction may be that, many people may be reacting that way because they're not used to seeing some with that, and it's kind of shocking to them. So my question is it through, like you're saying, maybe getting people jobs? How can the average person become in more contact with someone with Down syndrome so that it's not a weird thing to see? So it's not something odd.
Exactly different. Right. And you could go to any Gigi's Playhouse location at any time. Bring your family. Come in for a tour. Volunteer at an event. We do a lot of events at Gigi's. I mean, when COVID hit, when COVID hit us in 2020, we had to shut down. We had to shut down all 60 locations and startups in just that 4,400 hours a week of free therapeutic and educational programming was literally just halted that day. Isn't that crazy, Jim? We didn't even realize 4,400 hours a week is how much programming we're doing nationwide across the
country. Where was the first? Where was the first Gigi's Playhouse?
It was in Hoffman Estate.
And it was just a standalone. Was it a storefront? What kind of a location
it's
was
a it? Storefront. Yes, and that's what we do. We really like to be in the retail, in a storefront, because that opens up dialogue. So like you said, where can we see this? You could see us in a retail center. We want to be out in the open where people walk by with their kids. When we put our kids larger than life up on the windows, they're amazing. If you look and see what a Gigi's Playhouse looks like, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It has our kids all over the windows. But a problem with that, we opened up our Sacramento location last year during COVID. They opened, and it was this beautiful location. A week later, the word recharge was written all over the faces of our kids.
Oh, my God.
And Jim, it's just a problem because we're still allowing that word to be used by people, by politicians, people still use that word. You're not allowed to use other words that define a population. Why are you allowed to use that word? And why is it still okay? And, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that just, we have to stand up and make it stop. This is why we created Generation G. This is why I'm asking you to go to IAcceptYou.org and take that pledge of acceptance so we can change this. Because the problem is our kids, they in many states, we're not eligible for organ transplants. Just now, we were let out again, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, they just came up with the largest killer of adults with Down syndrome is Alzheimer's. All of our adult population is going, most of them are going to get it, and that is what's the largest killer of ours. So now they just came up with a new trial that's coming out, and they're excluding people with Down syndrome from the trial. Why is this okay? People with disabilities can't be a part of that trial. We continue to make them. The reason that people think this way is because of the way that we treat them and the way the world treats them and excludes them from organ transplants or from being in trials as something that's going to make your life better, because they don't value that life. as much as a typical person.
Well, we have to. You certainly have a lot more work to do, but at least you are bringing attention to this. I admire your passion. I admire your energy. Where can people donate to Gigi's Playhouse for this important cause?
Awesome. We could go to gigisplayhouse.org. And a donation could be a donation of time. They can volunteer, they can donate money, whatever it is, they can just come in for a tour. So gigisplayhouse.org to learn about us. And then iacceptyou.org is just to go and take that pledge of acceptance with your kids, your coworkers, or anybody, and live a Generation G lifestyle.
Well, I want to just once again, I'm just very impressed at what you're doing, and it's a great story that you just, you know, this came into your life unexpectedly, and rather than just laying down and accepting it and maybe wallowing in this in sadness, you took a potential negative and are turning it into a positive, and so hopefully many people will go to Gigi's Playhouse.org to see what you're doing, donate their time, donate money, but you're certainly doing some important work, and I'm glad I can give you a chance to talk about this. Nancy Gianni, the founder of Gigi's Playhouse, and please send our best to Gigi.
I will do that. Thank you so much. You have a fantastic day.
Thank you. Nancy Gianni, the founder of Gigi's Playhouse, an organization dedicated to uplifting people with Down syndrome, as well as getting rid of the stigma that we have for Down syndrome in our society. Important stuff. Hope you can go down that website and take a look. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. We'll take a little break here for news, and on the other side, we'll be talking about news with Charlie Meyerson. Take it away there, Swanee. Jim Toronto with you today, filling in for Dean Richards. But listen anyway. One of the things that that I was talking to earlier in the show with Dr. Kevin Most was the importance, and if you look at COVID as we now are at the two-year mark, sadly, just this weekend, I would around March 11th or 12th or so is when everything started to shut down, the dominoes started to fall. I believe it started, if I can remember correctly, it started with like the basketball was canceling some games, and suddenly when such a big entity like the NBA decided to start canceling games, then everything just started to shut down. The dominoes fell, and within a day or so, we were in a total lockdown. And 2 years later, one of the lessons, as I was talking with Dr. Most about, was hopefully we can learn to communicate better. And part of that is the type of information and news that we are getting, and how it is gathered, how it is dispersed, and how we consume it. And so I thought to talk about that, I would talk with not only one of the most respected journalists in Chicago, but also a friend of mine and actually a mentor of mine. I was an intern with my next guest here, Charlie Meyerson, who is the founder and publisher of ChicagoPublicSquare.com. It's a free daily email news roundup for Chicago. It's been dubbed by the Chicago Reader as one of the best free daily roundups in your inbox. So go to ChicagoPublicSquare.com. And Charlie, of course, known to many people in the radio world as well as in journalism. He's been a writer and reporter. He's been an anchor on the radio at WXRT, at WNUA, and he was also the news director here at WGN for a couple of years, too. So welcome to the show, Charlie Meyerson.
Man, I must be old to have done all that stuff.
Yeah, or just very driven.
And you didn't mention the fact that, that Dean Richards, for whom you are substituting, is someone I have worked with at multiple stops along my way. I first met him at my first job in radio at WMRO and WAUR in Aurora. We were teamed up on the morning show.
Yeah, in fact, I spoke
at WNUA and then again at WGN. So, I mean, it's a small world. And Jim, I want everyone to know, was a tremendous intern to us at WXRT.
Had a great time and learned a lot. And when I'm writing, I still hear your voice in my head about use active rather than passive.
You have my sympathy.
Well, I did speak to Dean earlier, and he's going to actually call in a little later, but I did mention that I was having you on, and he reminisced and mentioned those radio stations and the fact that you have worked at several places together. So Dean says hi. I wanted to talk to you today. Not only are you profiled in the Chicago Reader,
That was nice.
Yeah. So this website that you founded back in 2017 called Chicago Public Square is, well, explain, what is it?
Well, you know, I really have only ever had one good professional idea in my life, and that is...
You mean hiring me as an intern?
Well, yes. Okay, two. which is find out what's going on in the world and tell people about it. And that fundamentally is what a radio newscast is about. And even when I left radio to join the Chicago Tribune in 1998, the idea I brought in with me was that the Tribune's, it didn't even exist then, but the Tribune's email program should as much as possible emulate a radio newscast. It should have a voice, it should be conversational, it should look at what's happening around the world and give people a sense, briefly, of what they need to know.
So if I go to when I go to ChicagoPublicSquare.com, what do I find there?
You find what I think of as a daily newscast in text that you can subscribe to and get free in your email inbox every morning at 10 o'clock.
And it's news, national, local.
I call it Chicago's new front page, by which I mean it is news for Chicago, not necessarily of Chicago. And it applies the same principles that I've applied over the years to radio newscasts, which is what's going on in the world? Chicago, Illinois, the region, the nation, the world, that is useful and important and will resonate with the people reading in Chicago.
Now,
so, yep, national news, world news, local news, fun stuff.
Now, so it's kind of like a gathering of all these different news that I can get a nice overview of what's going on a daily basis. Then, right?
Yes, and where it differs, I think, from other email news services provided by other not independent news organizations is something that I argued for strenuously at the Tribune and was allowed to do for a while. And when I left the Tribune, they stopped doing it, at least in the long run, they stopped doing it, which is wherever the news comes from, I can include it. I'm not beholden to any one news organization. So WGN has a great interview, as I think was the case just this week. I linked to a WGN interview with who was it? It was it was someone talking about the police department, and I can't remember. I guess police reforms in the police department. If it's a Chicago Tribune story, if it's a Sun-Times story, if it's WTTW Channel 11, if it's WBEZ, if it's The Reader, if it's The Onion, which is based here in Chicago, and they've got something funny and relevant, I can toss that in.
So what I wanted to talk to you, we're going to take a quick break, but after the break I wanted to talk about. So what I'm finding as a news junkie, as a news hound, and I love to know, like you, I love to know what's going on and I love to share it. I consider myself in many ways in my media career, whether it's been talking on the radio, whether it's been writing, whether it's been a reporter, whether it's been in the public relations world, I really consider myself a storyteller in many ways. And I've just been very, angst-ridden over the last few years about how the paradigm of how we get news and how we consume news has changed. And it's, in my view, it's diluted. And there's been some dangerous infringements on the entire ethic of journalism and how journalism is done. And I think I've always put you up on a high pedestal as being a consummate journalist. So I'd love to get your take as to where you see journalism today and what kind of responsibility do we as consumers of this information, what added responsibility do we have now in this social media world? So think about that, and we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards, and this is sponsored by the Chicago's Symphony Orchestra, Jurassic Park. We'll be back after this. No switching. WGN! On the line, I've got noted Chicago journalist, award-winning Chicago journalist, Charlie Meyerson, who is the founder and editor of ChicagoPublicSquare.com, which is a news-gathering email daily service that will keep you up to date on everything that you should and need to know going on in the world and in your backyard. And what I wanted to ask you, Charlie, being someone who is, as I said, I think one of the consummate kind of journalists, It seems to me that, you know, social media and the speed of the internet over the last 20 years has had a detrimental effect on journalism, and especially over the last 10 or 15 with social media really becoming the dominant factor here in media. Is there confirmation of stories going on? Is there vetting? Can we trust what we are seeing? And if we can't, does that put a new onus and a new responsibility on the public as consumers of this to do our own research, to read a story and to go and look on the internet? Is anyone else saying this? Is anyone else seeing this? Is anyone else is this being printed or picked up? Do we as consumers of information now, do we have a new responsibility that perhaps we didn't, that we used to give to the media, but now we have to take it on ourselves?
Yes. Next question. No, Jim, yeah, that's true. I'm unlike maybe you, or like a lot of people, I'm optimistic about where we're headed as a news-consuming society. We all now have within our power the ability to do that research, which it didn't used to be the case. You know, going back 100 years, you maybe got a newspaper, and You either took it or left it. I mean, you read it and believed it, or you didn't. But there was very little way for people to double-check what they were being told, to check the veracity of what they were being told. There are now news organizations devoted to helping people be better news consumers. I'll give you a couple of plugs here. One is NewsGuard, which is an organization led in part by some people from Chicago, including Jim Warren, who used to work at the Chicago Tribune with me. It's a plug-in for your browser, sort of gives you an instantaneous read on the credibility of a website, a news source that you're looking at. Another organization, News Literacy, the News Literacy Project at newslit.org, which is largely targeted at children, but frankly can help a lot of older people who are, you know, frankly, in many cases, not used to dealing with the internet and the powers of information consumption they have. A lot of lessons there in how to vet the sources that you're looking at. The other thing is, you know, make sure that the organization that you're getting your information from follows some basic rules. For instance, does it do corrections? Does it run corrections? We all make mistakes. None of us are perfect in the news business or elsewhere. The difference between credible news organizations and incredible news organizations is the good ones run corrections, admit they made mistakes. Look for those organizations. Another one, do they have bylines? Are their names attached to stories? And can you then Google those names to find out who those reporters, those authors are, and what else they've done, and have other people written about them? There's just some basic things that everyone could do now that before the internet we couldn't do.
I always think back to the classic film, and regardless of your politics, the great film All the President's Men, which deals with Watergate and the Bernstein and Woodward work that they did to break that story. And for me, it's a great journalism movie because it really does show how the sausage is made in many ways. And I just think back of the constant battle that they had with, at the time, Jason Robards plays him in the movie, Ben Bradley, and they would come with a story and he would say, you don't have it yet. You need one more source, or you need one more confirmation. You don't have it. And it seems like, you know, I don't even think that kind of thought process exists anymore.
Oh, you're wrong.
Oh, really? Okay.
It exists in plenty of news organizations, many of them legacy news organizations, but a lot of them newer.
No, I mean online. I don't mean like news. I don't mean like television or news or radio. I mean
online now. I don't know. So about whom are you speaking?
Well, I'm talking about on social media is my point. You know, I mean, today we are all reporters in some way. We are all editors. I can post something right now and hit it, and it goes around the world in 2 seconds.
Yeah, and people can find out who you are if they choose to, and they should. You know, Jim Toronto says this. Well, wait, who's Jim Toronto? But again, the tool that people have that not a lot of people use, not enough people use, is, okay, ask that question. Who is Jim Toronto? One of the visual cues on Twitter is, does that person have a check mark? That's not necessarily an assertion, a validation of that person's credibility, but it gives you an idea that this person has gone through some sort of process and is, at the very least, whom he or she or they say they are.
So that you're talking about the accountability, then, of what somebody else is putting out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that all news consumers can do now that, you know, was more difficult to do before the Internet. Now, you go back to the Washington Post era, and it makes me want to mention that in Chicago now, we have a far more vibrant news ecosystem than we did before the Internet. Pre-Internet, you had, you know, a couple of major newspapers, maybe three or four newspapers, depending on how far back you go, and two, three, or four TV stations, and, you know, radio stations like WGN. Now you have far more, and a number of them organizations that did not really exist as news sources before the Internet. Better Government Association, Block Club Chicago, WBEZ has a vibrant news platform of its own. WGN is far more accessible than used to be the case in the old days. And by the way, footnote to what I said earlier, the interview that Chicago Public Square pointed to on WGN was Steve Bertrand and Lisa Dent talking to CTA Union President Keith Hill about security on the CTA. So I just want to clear that up. But, I mean, all of these things are now available to people, whereas once upon a time, if you had an interview on WGN, you either heard it or you didn't. You couldn't go back and listen to it. That's a tremendous tool for news consumers now.
So you are very optimistic then as to where the social media.
I wouldn't say very optimistic. I'm reluctant to make predictions, but right now I think we are not in a place that is as bad as perhaps you've suggested it is.
Well, I'm just looking at the misinformation that's going on so many topics like vaccination and stuff, and people believing outright fabricated stories put out by people that have definite agendas, and those stories are going out as fact.
Yes, but those people who see those stories now have the ability to do a quick Google and see, well, what does the Centers for Disease Control really say about
this? My point is, are they doing that? Are they lazy or not?
Did they before the Internet? I mean, there were disbelievers of all sorts before the Internet, too. The difference is now even the disbelievers have the ability to find out whether their beliefs are correct. Look, I don't want to minimize the problems that you're suggesting are with us. They are. But the game's not over yet. Part of it is we have an older generation, several generations, that have not been, as many of our younger people have been, raised through an educational system that teaches them the fundamentals of news literacy. We have a lot of older people, frankly, in the United States and around the world, who are used to just believing whatever they read, wherever they read it, without questioning. They need to learn, or, in the fullness of time, to leave the stage.
And on that note,
and I would prefer the former. Right. Let me say that.
I'm talking to Charlie Meyerson, who is the founder and publisher of ChicagoPublicSquare.com, a free email news roundup for Chicago. The website is right there, ChicagoPublicSquare.com. Charlie,
please sign up. A number have already, just as you and I have been talking, and we're always happy to have more free subscribers.
Excellent. Well, once again, Charlie, I appreciate the work you do. I think if anybody goes to that website, they will know that the facts and just the facts are being put out as much as they can be vetted.
And I would add, informed opinions, too.
Ah, okay, very good. Well, it's good to talk to you, Charlie. You're always in my head, and that's a good thing.
My sympathies.
Take care. Charlie Meyerson from ChicagoPublicSquare.com. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Dean is going to call us after the news, and we will do the news out, and we'll talk to Dean right after this. Ah, wow, there's an interesting song.
Yeah, I know.
You know how to get on my good side, don't you? Yes, Elton Jim. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We've had an interesting, jam-packed show today. I also want to mention that Ryan, I filled in maybe a month or so ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, January 30th.
Is that when it was? And at that time, I was in the middle of an interview, and Ryan cut me off.
Right, yeah.
Right in the middle of an interview. He was bored with it. He was sensing that maybe the audience was too, and just decided to cut me off in mid-sentence. And then
Today.
And then today.
Well, you know.
So I just wanted to say, I thought it was a mistake. Now, clearly, it's an editorial comment.
Premeditated.
Premeditated editorial comment. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Actually, I didn't mean to mention this. This is great for the viewer or the listener.
The viewer.
Because they can't view this.
Yeah, right. This is radio.
Those glasses you have are really sharp.
Oh, you like these?
Yes, the see-through frames like that.
Yeah,
those are big these days.
Yeah, they are. They're popular with the young people.
Yeah, they are. I just had a friend who popped a pair of those on a Zoom call the other day. I was like, "Whoa, look at those things!"
Yeah, and these are also like my readers.
Yeah, I noticed. You didn't have them on, and then you were going to go read a live read, and I saw you get those on.
Yeah.
Whoa, look at those see-through
frames. And what's interesting about readers is that for many years they were like throwaway glasses.
Right.
You know, you went to your local pharmacy or your Target or something like that, and they just had them hanging on one of those trees.
Dollars.
Yeah. And that's the other side, too. And they were like $3, and you broke them, and you bought 15 pairs because you left them somewhere, and you put them in the couch, and you sat on them, or they fell, whatever. And but I went on a website. Once again, I'm not getting any, promotional things. But there's a website called readers.com. where I got these, and I was just surprised. The price has gone up for readers, but to your point, they are much more stylish.
Yeah,
they're not just these black, those little half glass. Remember the little half glasses that you'd wear at the end of your nose? I mean, these you wear like glasses. I can't drive around with these or wear them, all the time, because even now, while I'm not reading any copy, looking at you, you are completely fuzzy.
Yeah, your eyes are tripled in size.
Are they?
No.
Well, I own a pair of Elton John's glasses from the 70s. He had LASIK. Oh. He had LASIK surgery, so he doesn't even really need to wear glasses.
Remakes or his
glasses. No, I've got a pair of his glasses.
Wow.
Yeah, from the 19s. If you ever go to, you can go online. If you you just Google like Elton John from 1976, you'll see he wore throughout the tour and even offstage, he had several different versions with different kind of lenses, but there are these very oversized white frames. And those are the glasses he was wearing at the first concert I ever saw him at Chicago Stadium. So I always was saying, even though he had crazy glasses, especially in the 70s, I always said if I was going to ever buy a pair of glasses, and that's kind of the holy grail if you're an Elton John fan to own a pair of his glasses, I would want those white framed glasses. And thankfully, about 20 years ago, somebody was selling them. He had an auction in the late 80s, and this person bought it from the auction, and they were selling them, and I was able to get a copy or get the pair, and they are a prize of my collection. But what's interesting is he did not wear sunglasses. He wore prescription glasses. And you said my eyes look huge as a joke, but when I first got the glasses, I get these things in the mail, and they were in, they were in a box, and they were in this little holder, and there they were, and I was like, oh, those are the glasses, I put them on and I almost fell over. His prescription was so hit. When you look at those glasses straight on, the inside, like the sides of your face are so inverted that it's almost like the face is almost half.
Yeah.
And so he was, and I mean, at the beginning when I would wear them, I would get dizzy. They were so strong.
Yeah.
And now, as I said, he had LASIK surgery. So when you see him with glasses, he doesn't really need to wear glasses anymore.
It's just part of the brand.
Now it's, it's a trademark. But he initially did have a really bad eyesight. And anytime I show someone the glasses and they put them on, they all go, whoa. Now, sadly, my eyes have gotten worse over the years. So now those glasses aren't all that bad anymore. I'm glad you like, I did like these. Like I said, I saw these online and I was like, wow, those are pretty cool, as opposed to just those throwaways.
Yeah, my mom had about 8 pair of those sitting in every room of the house.
And now, of course, because they're more expensive, you are a little more careful with them. And I actually have, I carry a holder with them. I mean, when did you ever see anybody carry a holder?
A holster.
Yeah, with readers. But I'm like, no, these weren't, they're not you know, they're not $50, but they're not five anymore. And even when you go to the, I was shocked. That's why I looked online, because I, when I went to the, you know, the pharmacy or something like that, I was like, wow, these things are all $20. But I guess, you know, everybody's using readers now.
Yeah. You know, the other artist that kind of his eyesight that is fascinating is John Lennon.
Oh, yeah.
Years. You know, they talked about when he'd be on the
totally blind.
All those, he couldn't even see the front row.
Yeah. When you see a lot of, I mean, on stage, especially in those early Beatle years, he never wore glasses. But if you look at any pictures taken of him in the studio during the early to mid 60s when they first broke, he's always wearing glasses.
Yeah.
And almost like the Buddy Holly dark, you know, the dark framed kind of glasses that were, that became popular in the 80s, the Wayfair kind of frame.
But
that
you know, the other thing when he's on stage, you know, he just looks like he's not really looking at anything. He's just staring in one direction.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he had really bad eyesight. In fact, it was a very moving and poignant exhibition about, once again, about 20 years or so. Now, every story I tell now is 20 years old. But at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Yoko Ono curated a John Lennon exhibit. And one of the things, so they had all the lyrics and all this stuff. It was about two or three levels at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But one thing that was so moving, and it was the first thing you saw when you walked in, because that's Yoko. She loves to really get to the hardest stuff and shock you. She had the paper bag filled with his bloody clothes.
Wow.
When he was at that, when he went to
the
emergency room.
Yeah.
You know, after he came home at the Dakota and was shot. Then they took him to Roosevelt Hospital. And so she's got the bag with the clothes that after he was pronounced dead, they give you this bag. And so there's this paper bag that just says like Roosevelt, or, you know, said something on it. But then the most kind of eerie thing was she had the pair of glasses that he was wearing when he got shot.
Yeah.
And they are bloodstained.
Oh, man.
And in fact, those glasses are on the cover of an album that she put out a couple of years after he was killed called Season of Glass. And you could see those glasses in the picture. But to see them in person, and once again, they're splattered. The lenses are splattered with blood. But once again, to your point, when you see the strength of the lens, you can see the way that he was really had bad eyesight.
Yeah.
You know. But
magnifying glasses.
Yeah, they really were. But yeah, like I said, Elton had LASIK surgery, and so now it's just you know, I'm wearing glasses because I'm Elton John. But before, he really, and the funny thing is, if you read a lot of old articles about him from the 70s, they always say he's got, you know, 100 pairs of sunglasses. Everybody thought he wore sunglasses. They didn't think that he needed glasses, but he really did need glasses. And I said, the pair that I have are proof of that. Holy smokes. I mean, wow. We'll take a quick break here. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. I just want to say a nice deflection by Ryan on that last segment. I was giving him a hard time for him cutting off. And then he realized, let's see, what should I do? You know what?
I'll talk about
Elton John, and I'll talk about his glasses. That'll certainly make him forget about talking about
it's
me
like
anymore.
When you come home from school and you know you're in trouble with your parents.
Nice job. Nice deflection. You know, I like that.
Look, I've been here a while.
You've learned. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. WGN, Chicago's very own. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. Dean, if you hadn't been listening to the show earlier today, he's called in a couple of times. He is preparing, and now I would assume at 12:22 or so that the Southside Irish Parade has begun. Earlier in the day here when we started the show at 9, then later at 10, Dean called in preparing to go to the Southside Irish Parade, being as a part of the WGN TV float in the Southside Irish Parade, taking place right now on Western, starting off at 103rd and Western. I believe he said going to about 115th and Western. So hopefully between now and the end of the show, in the next half hour or so, Dean will give us one more call and give us a float update, finally, from the parade. After we've been talking at the parade for 2.5, 3 hours, we'll finally get some real insight at what's going on out there on the South Side. So
I was bummed out to hear they don't throw anything out.
No, like I mean, that's, yeah, no, they used to always throw candy. I mean, that's part of things. Well, you know, that South Side parade was getting a little rowdy over the last several years.
Oh, was it?
Oh yeah. I mean, it started as a very small, like it is, you know, a small neighborhood parade, and grew so much that it got much more popular and much more attended than even the downtown one was, to the point where it became such a crazy party that people would be renting out buses and going there. I mean, it became it was Animal House. And so they finally said, okay, wait, we can't, this is getting out of control. And now they've tempered it down again as to give it more of a family and a local neighborhood parade as it started. But yeah, I guess maybe, you know, they're feeling that maybe you throw candy or something and people get hit with it. Who knows? But
I'll tell you what looked like a circus was Wrigleyville yesterday. Holy.
Oh, were you out?
Oh, we were out.
Where were you out?
About.
In the heart of Wrigleyville?
In the heart of Wrigleyville, Clark.
Was it kind of a, you know, amateur hour?
Man, yeah, it was in, I mean, we were in it. Like, we were, you know, right across Wrigley. We have a friend that works at a bar, so we always go and visit him, and, you know, he gives us the discount, so, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, why not? So we go, and wow, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I can't
1 o'clock in the afternoon?
I can't tell you how many tears we saw.
No, wait a minute. Are you along. Now, your last name is Pollock.
Right.
What is your nationality?
A little bit of everything. There's some Irish in there, but Pollock, I think, is Polish.
Oh, okay.
But it was.
Everybody's Irish.
Everybody's got a little bit of Irish in them, especially this time.
So, what was your drink of choice? What was your poison yesterday?
Well, so I go in, you know, my friend, I see him first. He's working. I'm like, hey, where are the other friends at? He's, oh, yeah, they're over in the corner. Okay. Yeah. Can I get you a drink? Yeah, sure. You got Guinness? No.
Oops. Wow.
He said, but he's like, you know, we got this other great stout. It was great. I don't drink Guinness enough to know, so it tasted just like Guinness. But that was what we did.
But you don't get the cool glass.
Right. Yeah. No cool glass. And then he did send, we were getting ready to leave. One friend, he's like, I got to go back to work. And, you know, we were getting ready to leave. He's like, sends shots over to the table.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Here we are. This is 1 p.m?
Yes.
That's, okay, now I have a question.
I don't want to be asleep by 5.
So let me understand this, because I am of Italian and Polish descent. Although, I about 4 or 5 years ago, I sent in to Ancestry.com to find out my full ancestry, and it came back. Oh, I was very surprised. I mean, I was basically, you know, almost 50-50 with the Italian and Polish, as I always thought. But then there were all these little aspects. There was some Jewish in there, and there was some British in there, and there was some Irish in there. Wow. And I was like, well, now I can celebrate St. Patrick's Day with some authenticity as opposed to just going along with the everybody's Irish. Yeah. Then they changed their algorithm a few years ago, and my Irish was taken out. So I was only Irish for like 2 years. and then there was no parades. You know, there were no, the last 2 years.
Couldn't even celebrate.
So I really couldn't celebrate, and now I'm not Irish anymore, and now the parades are back. So I got gypped out of my Irish heritage. I just have to go with the old everybody's Irish again.
Well, but send it back. You never know. Maybe they
They've changed it again. But here's my question to you: when, aside from St. Patrick's Day weekend, or when they're selling, because it's during the week, so this weekend is the big week. When do you ever drink at 1 p.m, like shots?
Yeah.
Do you ever do that, or is there something in your brain that clicks on and says, oh, I can be really irresponsible and silly and stupid right now because everyone else is, or what?
You know what? I really wasn't, we still were. We were not, you know, crazy.
No, I'm just.
You know, one friend goes, you know, I just go out. Let's just have a drink. He's like, funny enough that you mentioned that you went to the Lyric Opera last night. He's like, I'm taking the wife out to a nice steak
dinner. He went out partying at an Irish bar, and then he went to the Lyric Opera later?
I texted him about 8 o'clock. I was like, there's no way you're awake for this thing.
Jeez.
You got to be asleep. Oh, how fun. Yeah, so yeah. It was fun. It was more of a sightseeing, you know, thing. We're right. not really hard partiers, so it was yeah. more fun to just kind of, like, look at the chaos going around.
Well, there's no question that, you know, Chicago has a huge and loyal and devout, you know, Irish, you know, community here. No question. But I wonder if Richard J. Daley and Richard M. Daley, I mean, we had 40 years of Daley mayors in this city over the last, you know, 60 years or so. We had 40 years of Daleys. And I wonder if we would be as party animal driven on St. Patrick's Day if not for Richard J. Daley having such a strong influence on the city. And, you know, this whole idea of dying the river and, you know, Daley from the South Side and Bridgeport. I just wonder if him being the mayor for so long, he would walk in the parade. If we didn't have an Irish person as the mayor for so long, and he had, you know, he had 20 years and then his son had 20 years, more than that. You know, they had such an influence. I wonder if we would have had different ethnic, you know, mayors over the years, if we would still be celebrating St. Patrick's Day with that same kind of vigor that we do here. I it's hard. It's impossible to tell now because it's embedded in the Chicago fabric. But one way or the other, it's a time to get together. People are having fun. The masks are off. I'm still a little leery on that, but, you know, we'll see. Fingers crossed. Let's hope the pandemic is in our rearview mirror. If it isn't, I guess we'll go back to masks. But for now, enjoy your St. Patrick's Day weekend. And, of course, if St. Patrick's Day is happening on the 17th earlier or later this week. So have fun, but be safe. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN Radio, 720 AM. We're going to take a little break for news, and we'll talk to you right after that. That's a little In Excess, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I was a DJ in college. I was playing the hell out of In Excess. It was right. In fact, I saw In Excess one summer more times than any other band just because they were opening for so many bands. They were really trying to break into the U.S. market in the early to mid 80s. And so they opened for like the Go-Go's, and I saw them like three or four times one summer, more than I saw any other band. And yet I never went to see them, but I saw them, and man, they certainly had, you know, a lot of stage presence.
They got that sound, you know?
Yeah. It was very clear to see that they were going to break big. And then they certainly did with that, with that Kick album. But yeah, In Excess. Yeah, there's a great. I love their early song. A lot of people don't know it's called "Original Sin," and it's interesting now because it's about interracial relationship, which in the 70s or in the 80s was still a big deal. Now, of course, you know it's nothing. But that was kind of a controversial song that they put out at that time. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. So now Dean is taking a day off today. Well, not really a day off. He is quote unquote working, just not on the radio today. Taking part in the Southside Irish Parade, which just, I guess, kicked off a little while ago. It was supposed to start at noon. Dean had called in a couple of times during the show, at the top of the show at 9 and again at 10, as he was preparing to go. And we were hopefully going to get some actual on-site report from Dean on the float in the parade, which is taking place right now on the south side on Western, kicking off at 103rd and Western and going to 115th. As I said, Dean is going to be on the float with many other WGN News personalities, as well as the big scoop, of course, Bozo the Clown. When in doubt, bring Bozo. They couldn't get Tom Skilling. I guess Tom had a previous engagement, so Tom was not there. But they brought in the big guns, Bozo the Clown. So if you're going to be going to that parade, or perhaps you're there right now, or maybe you're on the way in your car, look for the WGN float, because Dean Richards and Bozo, wow, what a team, will be waving at you. I guess Dean and the other folks are all dressed up. They're wearing the green today, as everybody's Irish. Even if you're a Greek guy like Dean, You can be a little Irish, little in you there. As I said, I took an Ancestry.com test, and it came back, and I was happy to be a little Irish because I went to St. Patrick High School on the northwest side on Belmont and Austin, proud Shamrock, Shamrock pride. And one of the cool things about going to St. Pat's, I don't know if it's true today, but going there when I did in the early 80s, we would have a raffle to raise money for the school. And you'd have to go out and sell these raffle tickets. And the big carrot at the end of the stick was that if the school raised X amount of dollars through the raffle tickets, then we would get St. Patrick's Day off as a holiday in tribute to the saint after which the school was named. But also, you know, when you're a freshman or a sophomore or even a junior or senior, hey, it's a day off. So we always made that quota, and we always got St. Patrick's Day off. And they always had a float in the parade as well. So I always, you know, so all of my, even though, as I said before, my dominant, you know, ethnic background is Italian and Polish. My father was Italian, obviously Toronto, and my mom was Polish. my mom's maiden name was Kielbasa. And if anybody knows anything about Polish, that means sausage. So as a joke, my dad would always call her Lori Sausage. And
I bet that went over.
Yeah, that went. Yeah, that was. Yeah, it always went over well. And my mom was, you know, she was born here, but her parents were from Poland, and she spoke Polish and she wrote Polish. She was actually a translator for a lot of Polish people that came over, you know, to get their citizenship. And she was very active in the Polish community. Very proud, proud Polish person. But you know, she was also raised during the time of the Polish joke, which now has seemed to have faded, thankfully. But so she was very sensitive to that. But she was born and, you know, born and raised in a very Polish neighborhood on Augusta Boulevard. At the time, was very Polish, and so of course everyone in her neighborhood knew what a kielbasa was, and she was so kidded by the kids in her neighborhood for having this kielbasa name because it meant sausage. That when she got older and she, you know, left home and got, you know, went out to the workforce, she actually changed her name to Kielbera just because she was so tired of being kidded about that name. But I have to tell you, on her gravestone, she was a very proud Polish person. And so I did put her name on her gravestone as Lorraine Kielbasa Toronto, because I wanted her Polish heritage to be there. So now at the other side of it, I just hope when people are walking through the cemetery and they see it, they don't say, "Oh, look at that's Lori Sausage." So even from the grave, she's still hearing that. Sorry, Mom. But I was really happy to have a little Irish in me because Chicago is so identified with the Irish community here. And I went to St. Pat's, and all of my high school memorabilia. I still have my varsity, you know, coat with the, you know, with the those leather jacket, leather arms, those coats. You know, once again, it's green and gold, and there's a big shamrock on the back. All of my sports stuff. I used to play sports in high school. All of that is all green and gold. So I felt a little strange wearing it because I'm not really Irish, but at the same time, I was proud of the school and still am. So I was happy to have some Irish blood in me now, so I could actually be a part of that that collective. And as I said, then I went online about 2 years later or so, and the whole my whole profile changed, and the Irish was gone. So I'm back to wearing my St. Pat's varsity jacket. I still wear it sometimes. But I can't share in it legitimately. But as I said, on St. Patrick's Day weekend, I guess, you know, we're all Irish. But let's not forget, there is a forgotten holiday here, folks. St. Joseph Day is March 19th, 2 days after St. Patrick's Day. And poor St. Joseph, I think, always gets the short end of the stick In the Italian community, St. Joseph's Day is celebrated. A lot of churches would always have a St. Joseph's Day table filled with all different kinds of Italian foods and pastries. I went online. There are a few of them, but not as many as there used to. There used to be, but wow. You know, I mean, St. Joseph, I think I don't know why they put St. Joseph's Day so close to St. Patrick's Day. But it does sort of, it sort of becomes the speed bump. You know, it's kind of like, oh, and by the way, there's St. Joseph's Day. But let's not forget, you know, St. Joseph has a pretty good pedigree. You know, foster father of Jesus. That's not bad. If you're talking about, you know, sainthood and stuff in the Catholic Church, foster father of Jesus is pretty good. I know he didn't run some snakes out of Ireland, but being the foster father of Jesus isn't a bad thing on your resume. So let's not forget St. Joseph's Day. Give St. Joseph some props on March 19th this year. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards at WGN 720 AM. You want me to read this now or when we come back? Do it now? All right. Hey, have you been able or you've been to Catch 35 yet? It's the iconic seafood restaurant with locations in the Leo Burnett Building in downtown Chicago and in downtown Naperville. Catch 35 is a great spot for Lent as well. The menu features a fried seafood platter, some cedar planked salmon, house smoked salmon, sriracha shrimp roll, Asian sesame oysters, and so much more. And there's also a very impressive wine list and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays. You'll enjoy critically acclaimed live jazz music Tuesdays through Saturdays. So book your reservation at catch35.com and tell them you heard it on WGN. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. WGN. This segment is sponsored by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at Wheaton College. I was saying earlier in the show that I sort of had an artsy week this week. Last night, my wife and I went to the Lyric Opera to see the opening night of the new production of Tosca. And if you are an opera lover, I would suggest you get there. Really, really excellent production. The sets look great. Michelle Bradley is Tosca. She gives an exhilarating performance. And Russell Thomas is Cavaradossi, who is her love interest, and he sings some of the most popular arias of the Puccini opera. So if you are an opera buff, or maybe you're just thinking about it, try going to the Lyric Opera and seeing Tosca. I think it's a good opera to start with, because the story is not that complex, and there's some very recognizable songs, and it might be a nice way to put your toe into the opera world, into the pool. But earlier in that week, we also then went to the Goodman Theater to see their current production of a play called The Notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci. And this is a play that was directed and written by Mary Zimmerman, who is quite a big deal here in the Chicago theater world. And she originally did this show 30 years ago, doing a revival of it. I'm a big Leonardo da Vinci fan. In fact, on my signature at the end of my email, as well as on my Facebook page, I have a quote from Da Vinci, which says, "We must do." And that was one of his quotes, a philosophy of his. You just don't sit back, you know, get out there and do, observe, be active. And everybody, of course, knows Leonardo da Vinci from, The Last Supper and Mona Lisa. But he was really, truly in that term, a Renaissance man in terms of architecture and philosophy and engineering and obviously painting and art. He did a little sculpture. You name it, he did it all. Really, one of his main things was, ironically, was studying the human body. He would examine corpses for the knowledge of when he was drawing someone or painting someone, the way that the veins were in a hand or the muscles in an arm or in a leg. And he would do these sketches and these notebooks, of which this play is based on. He would he would write in it was sort of a diary, but they were notebooks. He would be taking notes. He would be giving some thoughts. He would be sketching different things, different people's expressions, people he saw on the street that he might use later for a painting. These notebooks became legendary, obviously. There's not a lot of Da Vinci art out there. Like many artists, sadly, he was always distracted and he didn't really... He was working on the Mona Lisa up until he died for several decades. But what's really interesting about this play is that it is excerpts from these diaries, these notebooks, that give you a nice overview of Da Vinci's overall perspective on things, whether it's nature, whether it is the human body, whether it's painting and art. So once again, a nice little way to educate yourself about Leonardo da Vinci. We always hear about the Last Supper and the Mona Lisa, and that's about it. But he's quite an interesting figure. In fact, there's a great biography that was written a few years ago by Walter Isaacson called Leonardo da Vinci, and I would suggest you get that as well if you want to find out a little bit more. But I just have to say, two actresses in this play were outstanding. So at least I would like to acknowledge them. One was Casey Foster, and the other one was Cruz Gonzalez-Cadell, and they were excellent. They really, everybody in the play, it's kind of a performance art piece. Everybody plays Leonardo in this play, and they're all taking certain aspects of his personality and telling you what he thought based on these excerpts from the notebook. So that is at the Goodman until March 20th, so just... you know, another week. But if you want to get and see an interesting play and learn a little bit about one of mankind's greatest artists and philosophers, Leonardo da Vinci, go see the notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci.